Welcome. Today we're going to look at a little bit at the planets, see what's going on there, very briefly. Yesterday was the appearance day of Saraswati, goddess Saraswati. That is she being featured on the mantle there. That's our makeshift altar. She's in the foreground the brass. And Saraswati, according to the Vedic understanding, is the goddess of learning and patron of the arts. So we've discussed Saraswati in the past. And because yesterday was her appearance day, we will honor her today and we will learn a mantra connected to Saraswati. We've learned one in the past, and this one will be a little bit different. Not radically different, a very simple mantra. So we'll look at that a little bit later. And I'm going to talk tonight about the four human goals, according to yoga philosophy, which are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma is duty. Artha is economic development. Kama is sense fulfillment, sense enjoyment. And moksha is liberation. So we'll take a look at that and see, you'll figure out where you're at for your own self and what's important and how we humans tend to organize our priorities or not, as the case may be. Today, Venus in the sky has moved or is in the process of moving out of Sagittarius and into Capricorn. Capricorn's a good spot for Venus because Capricorn is ruled by which planet? Anybody know? By Saturn. And Venus and Saturn are friends. They're considered to be friends. If you have any planets in Capricorn in your Vedic birth chart, if you want to go home and look at that, or if you know in your mind, then it should be a pretty good month for you with Venus on top of those planets, because Venus brings joy and happiness and fulfillment and realization of goals and objectives, depending what planets they are, of course, and where it is. But largely it's Venus's transits, in other words, its movement through the different signs and houses, is generally speaking very, very favorable, because it's a naturally benefic or benevolent planet. So that's today. Tomorrow, according to Vedic astrology, the sun will move. And the sun will move from Capricorn into Aquarius. Vedic, the movements of the sun do not happen on the 21st of every month, like they do in Western calculation, on or about the 21st. In Vedic, they move around the middle of each month. So, currently, the sun is in Capricorn, and tomorrow it will move into Aquarius for the coming month. So, for those of you with the sun in Aquarius, then happy birthday for the coming month. And Aquarius is the natural 11th sign of the zodiac, which is one of the, if not arguably, the strongest place for the sun. It's really, really strong in Aquarius, or in the 11th position. One is able to fulfill desires, goals, objectives, wishes, hopes, and dreams. That may or may not apply to you, depending on your chart, but it is a very powerful transit of the sun. And if it has something to do with the age of Aquarius, well, then it would also trigger that to some extent. We did speak that next week I was going to do a presentation. It's going to require a little work on my part to get it ready. And we were going to talk about 2012 and the coming changes all in the light of Vedic time and time calculation, including the four yugas, Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, and Iron Age, the one we're in now, Kali. So I'm going to try to give you a little bit of insight as it relates to that. And that'll should get your mind swimming a little bit next week. Gets my mind swimming. When you're dealing with those those calculations that go on for hundreds of thousands and millions of years in duration, you really get a sense of where you fit in into the scheme of things. Yeah, as it should be, you know? Okay. The four human goals: Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Can you see through my head, Catherine?
Yeah.
Or duty, economic development, sense enjoyment, and liberation. These are supposed to be the four main pursuits, according to yoga philosophy, of a human being throughout the course of one's lifetime. We will come to see that most of the people nowadays in Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, not only do not practice or try to achieve these four human goals, they're in fact not even aware of them. They may be aware of the first three, Dharma, Artha, Kama, certainly of the second two, economic development and sense enjoyment. We all know what that's about. Dharma, or duty, and we're really going to talk about Dharma a lot here, is something that is slipping away gradually, little by little. Because why should we undertake duty or obligation or virtue or morality or doing things on behalf of others, what to speak of doing things on behalf of God for God's pleasure? Let's just cut right to the economic development and, you know, make as much as we can, as quickly as we can, so that we can cut right to sense enjoyment. Better yet, why don't we just cut to sense enjoyment and cut out all the other difficulty that we have to go through in earning the money. I mean, some people think like that. Liberation is not even really regarded in our modern understanding. Okay, so let's see how this all is meant to fit together. Dharma is the most important one, arguably. There is no English word to explain Dharma. It's too complex. Most of you have heard the term Dharma. Most of you know, you have some idea of the meaning of Dharma, and it's probably up there. If you have a different one than you're reading there, all those different meanings, then you're welcome to tell us. So Dharma is duty. Everybody has a duty, a responsibility, or an obligation to self and to others, to the world around you. You can't just take. You can, but you shouldn't. You should take what you need, and in exchange you give something. And this is it exactly. It's an exchange. We all give something and take something in return. Whether or not we use the monetary system is hardly the point. So everybody must make a contribution. That is the essence of Dharma and your duty, or you are duty bound to do that. On another level, Dharma is, and for me, this is most important, life purpose and basic nature. How many people know what their life purpose is here on earth in this lifetime? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Good. That's good. 9. Okay. Excellent. Because most people don't. Most people don't. It's not that they don't want to. The ones that want to really want to know what their purpose is and sometimes struggle long and hard to discover what that may be. Some people, of course, it doesn't even dawn on what it may be. Everybody is here for some kind of purpose. Everybody. And your purpose should be reflective of your basic nature, your God-given nature, your fundamental gifts, whatever it is your inclinations may be. That is your Dharma. The Dharma of sugar is sweetness. That's its Dharma. The Dharma of water is wetness. That's its Dharma. If I gave you dry powder and told you it was water, you'd say, it's not. Because it isn't. So the Dharma is something that cannot be separated from that person or that substance, for that matter. Okay? So the fundamental nature is what we're talking about here. We are to do our life purpose, to do the thing that we've come here to do, in service to humanity, to the world around us. If you don't act in accordance with your nature, if you don't know what your purpose is, then, but you still try to fulfill desires, because everybody's got desires. So let's just say it like this. On the one hand, there's purpose. On the other hand, there's desire. Or we can say, on the one hand, there's Dharma. And on the other hand, there's economic development, or I should say, calm, sense enjoyment, or whatever the... Okay. So, if you either ignore your purpose or don't know your purpose, but you try to achieve certain things... Like sometimes people will work solely for money. They don't have a purpose. They say, well, money's my purpose. Profit is my purpose. Becoming wealthy is my purpose. That can never be a purpose. Ever. That is the fruit of the labor, of the fruit of the purpose. The purpose itself is what you've come here to give and what you've come here to offer. That's your purpose, again, in terms of your fundamental nature. So what might some purposes be? Let's look at that. Maybe you're a healer. Your purpose is to heal people. Maybe you're a teacher or an educator, and your purpose is to educate people. Or maybe you're a beautician or an aesthetician and your purpose is to make people beautiful. Or maybe you're a comedian and your purpose is to tell jokes and make people laugh. Or to say funny things. Or maybe you're a counselor and you counsel people. Or maybe you're a financial planner and you help people with their financial investments. Or perhaps you aid in the rehabilitation of those in need. Or perhaps you sell clothing. Or perhaps you look after an autistic child. Anything could be your purpose. And it may not be limited to one thing. If you work on desire alone, or kama, as we looked earlier, and you say you become very successful or wealthy, and you make a lot of money, or you realize certain goals that you set for yourself. If you are doing that without knowing or without paying attention to your fundamental purpose, will it satisfy you? No matter how much money. It won't. It just won't. Because that fundamental ingredient of who am I, what am I here to do, what is my purpose in life, has not been recognized and not been realized and not been acknowledged. So it doesn't matter how successful you may be or how wonderful other people may think you are, it won't satisfy. So it doesn't have to be complex. You don't have to be wealthy. But you have to know and discover what your purpose is. And that purpose must be reflective of your basic nature. To me, that's the most important meaning of Dharma. When you have a society that either doesn't know their purpose or doesn't act on the purpose that they know they are or that they have, then you have what I call a 5 o'clock Friday society. Which is it almost five? Is it almost Friday? All they think about is when the work day ends. When do I get out of here? That's what I'm looking forward to. So what is the level of work and production of a society whose mind is not on the work? Whose mind is not focused in the joy of the work and the fulfillment of the purpose? It can't be good work. It can't be. Because how can it be when the focus isn't there? It's better, I know we all have been in positions where we've had to do X, Y, or Z, unhappily so, to pay the bills. I think, I don't know if there's anybody sitting here that hasn't had to do that at some point in time. Hopefully, you didn't have to do it your entire life thus far. That's my wish, that won't happen. But you see the need to do your purpose. It is also unfortunate and characteristic in Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, that many people cannot do their purpose and sustain themselves financially. That is also a symptom of this age, unfortunately. But if you sacrifice or compromise your purpose, and you do it day in and day out, year in and year out, and you become unhappy, frustrated, maybe angry, maybe resentful, that can actually result in disease, physical disease, of being emotionally shut down, depression. Many, many different symptoms can arise. So is it a good idea to neglect your purpose? No. Following your purpose is exactly the same as following your heart. What's the difference? There isn't any. So if you say, well, I'm not sure what my purpose is, fine. If you haven't figured it out yet, no problem. Then follow your heart. My purpose occurred to me, I'm trying to remember when that was. When I was around 28, 29, 38, then I just had this, oh, that's my purpose. I could see it, I could feel it, you know. Well, it took me about 10, 11 years later before I could start to do it. You know, it took another 10 or 11 years. But, hey, you know. Okay, so life, purpose, basic nature, that's clear. Dharma is also religion or spiritual practice. That's Dharma. What religion? Whatever religion. Or if you're more transcendental, maybe you don't do religion, you do spirituality. Is there anything wrong with religion? No. If it works for you, you get something out of it. In religion, we use a certain ritual and a certain dogma, and we go to the church, and God's there, and we can commune with God, perhaps through the ritual in the church. Can this be done? Yes. Some people only do it on Sunday for half an hour. If you're spiritual, you can commune with God everywhere, anywhere, around the clock. You can do this when you're religious too, but generally that's not how it works. And the other thing about religion is that we're all being saved and you're all doomed. And this is a common trait you will find in pretty much every religion. You join us, there's a hope for you, otherwise you're pretty much toast. You're finished. It's only a question of time. So, anyway, religion, spiritual practice. And then charity, philanthropy, humanitarianism, benevolence, anything that may also be an expression of Dharma, where you're doing good deeds and good acts on behalf of others, that too is an expression of Dharma. Okay. So what does it all come down to? Ultimately, service. So there's Dharma and there's what they say in Sanskrit, Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan means eternal. Eternal. There's your Dharma and then there's your eternal Dharma. What's the difference? It's all service. It all comes down to service. Well, how is it different? We go to a restaurant and we say, the food here is great, but that is terrible. The service. So even though the food may be wonderful, if the service is terrible, do you enjoy it? Not really. Not really. If the service is great and the food's mediocre, do you enjoy it? There's more of a chance that you would enjoy it, isn't there? Yeah. So, employee serves employer, parent serves child, lover serves beloved, merchant serves customer, politician serves people. Who's not serving? Everybody's doing their Dharma or somebody's Dharma and they're serving. Everybody serves. And oftentimes we do it out of joy because it's our Dharma, our purpose, and we love doing it. We like the job. If you wake up in the morning and you're happy to go to your place of employment, or you're happy to go and do the work that you're going to do, that's a real good sign. Real good sign. Or if you're chronically late every day to work, that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. I know you're stuck on the M50, but you know. So temporary or temporal service in relation to the body means we serve different people in different relationships in different capacities. But what is Sanatan Dharma? What is eternal religion, eternal duty? Service to God. God. Because if you're in this body or not in this body, to serve God is something that you will do eternally if you choose to serve God. So that's the highest form of service, and subsequently that is the highest form of Dharma or duty. If you serve God, you will automatically serve everyone else. Why? Because it's like pouring water on the root of the tree. and by pouring water on the root of the tree, all of the branches and leaves are satisfied. You say, but I don't want to pour water on the root. I'm going to pour water on this branch over here. This is the branch I like. This is the, all this leaves, all these bunch of people here, the other one's for me. Okay? You can do that if you like. But that's not Sanatana Dharma, that's temporary. And that'll end with your body. So the eternal Dharma, it is service to God. And through that, humanity will be served. Alright? So that's Dharma. Let's go back to this. Now, Artha, economic development, that's pretty obvious what that is. That's making money or making a living.
Abundance.
It's abundance. And then that allows you the facility to enjoy yourself, which is Artha. Fulfill desires, enjoy your senses, have some fun, have a bit of good crack, as we like to do here in Ireland. And any and all of this is fine. In balance. In the material world. In human society. Then the fourth one is moksha, or liberation. Liberation from what? From samsara. Samsara is the wheel of repeated birth and death. Over and over again. Taking birth, living for a while, dying, and because you've generated karma, positive, negative, another lifetime is there for you. You have material desires connected to the body, you'll get another body, no problem. So you can fulfill the desires and get the results of your karma, of your previous actions. What goes around, comes around. So moksha means we're done with all that. We're finished. We get liberation from repeated birth and death. And we can go to the spiritual realm where the soul belongs, because the soul is spirit or spiritual in nature. That is our constitutional position. In the spiritual world, we are like fish in water. In the material world, we are like fish out of water. How do we know we're like fish out of water? Because we get old and we don't want to get old. Because we get sick and we don't want to get sick. Because we suffer and we don't want to suffer. And because we die and we don't want to die, and then we have to take birth again. That's proof positive that this is not the ultimate Disneyland experience for us. This is not the ultimate reality. So pretty hard to argue against that. Now, most people don't know a lot about moksha or liberation. They don't even know, well, what do you mean? I'm having a good time here. What are you talking about? I'm enjoying myself. I'm down at my local every night, every couple nights. You know, I know all the lads. Everything's great. Okay, well then. You're not, this is not for you. This is for you down at the local. This is when you know that the material experience is not really satisfying on the deepest level possible. So then you're ready for moksha, or at least you're ready to consider liberating the soul from the body. Now, even though most people do not understand the concept of liberation or the need for it,
We are busy still doing our own reflection of this activity. And what is it? It is escapism. And that's how it manifests down here in the material world. We want to escape. And people sometimes say about others, oh, that person's just trying to escape. They don't want to face the responsibilities. They don't want to face life head on. And they're doing A, B, C, and D. They're trying to escape. And we sort of look down on that because they are trying to escape, right? Well, we all do it. We absolutely all do it. Okay? Let's hear how we do it. Please.
Movies.
Shopping. I think is a big escape.
Drugs.
Travel is a big one.
Music.
Drugs is a big one. Getting bigger in Ireland. Music can be, depends. Yeah, music is an escape, but music can also be
liberating
and soothing. But yeah, definitely, it can be an escape.
Talking
too much, not listening.
Sex,
absolutely.
Reading.
Fictions.
Which?
The fictions.
Fictions, yeah. Eating. You know, ignoring people when they're talking to you and going about your miles away. So there's many, many ways that we escape. And it is our nature. It's part of our nature to want to get away. Because ultimately, we want to get out of here completely. And that's what people don't really realize. So next time you catch somebody escaping, be a little bit more understanding. Because you're probably just catching them escaping at their little thing right now. And somebody ought to be catching you a few minutes from now because you're going to be busy doing your thing. Truth be told. You know. But this is... we're wired, we're hardwired for this. This is part of our nature.
So the goals is maybe kind of a wrong word for it, because there are four aspects of life on Earth.
Yeah. Well, it's a goal in the sense that
because we just naturally want Dharma, we naturally want Artha, we naturally want Kama.
Well, see, I disagree because nowadays more and more a lot of people don't want Dharma. You know, if I can get this thing that I want for nothing without having to work for it, if I can convince you, or what if I can cheat you? What if I can break into your home and get it? And I don't, this happened just up the road here today, we heard this morning. Some little old lady, they broke into her house. They ripped up all her floorboards looking for stuff. They trashed her entire house.
Was she in it?
No, she wasn't in it at the time. So, you know, they wanted Artha so they could get Kama, but they didn't want to do any Dharma at all. You see. You got me there, you know. You got me there. They didn't have to do some Dharma. You know. Some effort was required. A lot of people. There are large segments of society. Well, large. That's relative. Of people who don't want to do anything. It's not that they're not capable. They're capable. They just don't want to. And if the government, if you can go on the dole and you're going to get X amount per month, and nowadays too, sometimes it's more economically feasible to be on the dole than it is to go get a minimum wage job. So Dharma is a contribution to the world around you. So now the Vedas say that there are four varnas, which are natural divisions of human society. You will find these historically in any and every society you wish to examine, including our current world or society. Because Chaturvarnya Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that these four divisions of society were created by me, by God, and therefore they are eternal and functional. You'll find them everywhere. So this can help you figure out your purpose if you don't know what it is. And there they are. The first is Brahman. Brahmins are teachers, advisors, healers, intellectuals, priests, doctors, lawyers, thinkers, philosophers. Brahmins. What we're doing here is Brahman Dharma. What we're doing here right now, this is Brahman Dharma. Kshatriya are leaders, organizers, and protectors. Police department, fire brigade, army, military, government, and all the different facets of government and departments of government which are supposed to be set up to help the people. And I wish they'd come and pave the road out here pretty soon. So that's Kshatriya. Anybody who wants to organize on behalf of the people and or protect the people. The king, according to Vedic understanding, the king is allowed to tax the citizens on one condition, that he protects the citizens from the enemy within and from the enemy without. The enemy without are criminals and anybody who preys upon the populace. So he must protect the citizens from criminals and criminal activity. The enemy within is disease. It is the king's job, the government's job, to protect the citizens from disease. That means healthcare. And if he's not sufficiently protecting the citizens from the enemy within and the enemy without, he is not entitled to take a tax. It's pretty radical. Pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
You can go put that down, mention that to the revenue. I don't know how it'll go over. It won't go over well. The third level is Vaishyas, merchants, business people, farmers, bankers, insurance business. These people generate economy, and they also, just generally speaking, feed everybody and handle finances and monetary concerns. And produce food. And then Shudra are craftsmen, tradesmen, and laborers. Sometimes they compare this to the body. And the Brahmins are the head, Kshatriyas are the arms, Vaishyas are the belly, and Shudras are the legs. Is one superior to the other? Put it this way. if we're missing one of these segments of society, can society function? No. Not possible. Not possible. In the Vedas, it's stated that for every person born a Brahmin, for every one Brahmin born in society, two Kshatriyas are born. For every two Kshatriyas, four Vaishyas are born. And for every four Vaishyas, eight Shudras are born. So for every one Brahmin, you got eight Shudras. Now, I don't know if somebody's up there counting, but that's generally how it plays out. Because that's more or less the balance. So, you should find that you very easily fit into one, probably two, of those categories. And if you're a Renaissance man or a Renaissance woman, you probably do all four. Anybody do all four? Anybody fit in? Anybody three? Anybody only one? Everybody see a predominant one for themselves? Yeah. Makes sense, yeah. So, this is how to figure out your Dharma. Now, if somebody is a real good craftsperson, maybe they make, they're a finishing carpenter, maybe they make beautiful cabinets and things, falling into the fourth category, and everybody's real happy. Because, look at the beautiful work that this person is turning out, for example. Okay. I just wanted to say there's a nice story about artha or economic development. As we've talked about, there is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. She's up there on the right next to Vishnu. Vishnu's on the left. He's God. On the right is Vishnu's wife, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. She is wealth personified. As we've said repeatedly, God's the wealthiest guy around. And that's his wife. And she tends to stay with God all the time and tends to visit humans from time to time. And even though you may be wealthy one lifetime, you may not necessarily be wealthy in the next lifetime. So that's the nature of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. One time, the demons, or the darker characters in the universe, found Vishnu in deep meditation. So they figured, well, seeing how Vishnu's meditating and he's otherwise indisposed, let's kidnap Lakshmi and we'll take her down to the lower planets where we live. And with her by our side, we'll be rich and powerful, they figured. So they grabbed Lakshmi and they took her down to the nether regions of the universe, called Patala. But when they brought Lakshmi down to the netherworld, she began to weep. And the demons subsequently began experiencing great sorrow. Well, wait a second. We just, you know, want some money. We don't want all this mental duress. So long as there are tears in the eyes of Lakshmi, there will be misery in the nether regions. And this is what their priest Shukra told them. If she's crying, you'll be miserable. Well, why is she crying? Asked the demons. You've wrenched her away from her Lord. She can give you all the material comfort you want, but without Vishnu, without God, she can't give you any peace of mind. So Yeah, you're wealthy now. No peace of mind. Realizing their foolishness, even the demons realized their foolishness. The demons let Lakshmi return to the spiritual realm with Vishnu. As she left, their wealth and power went with her. But there was joy in their hearts. Why? Because they had done the right thing. They did the proper dharma. And demons, by definition, means adharma, non-dharma. Right, let's do all the wrong stuff. We'll be better. So, those who seek both spiritual bliss and material delight worship both the Lord and His consort. And that's why in chanting, in the Vedic understanding, the name of the female energy, the divine feminine, is always chanted first. Like Sita Ram or Radha Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan. The respect is always given first to the divine feminine. So what is this lovely little story telling us? If you gain wealth, if you pursue wealth and you gain wealth for your own satisfaction, for the purpose of kama, but you don't acknowledge Vishnu, you do not offer some of your wealth and your effort to God, whether you give one tenth in charity or simply you have an attitude of offering. I do this for you. We chant this mantra every time. Kayena vacha manasendri arva buyamana va prakrite subhavat karomi ajasa kalambarasmai sri govinda yeti samapayami. Everything I do, my body, my mind, my speech, my senses, my soul, everything, I do it for you. So this will spiritualize, purify whatever you do. So then when the wealth comes, the peace of mind will come to you. Follow the Dharma, you'll make money, you'll be able to enjoy your senses, little enjoyment, not a bad thing, and we can work toward getting out of this place, not just escaping in Dundrum Cinema for 2 hours. If you do only duty, in other words, if you're not interested in economic development and sense enjoyment, that would mean that you're a very, very high soul, a very evolved soul, and a very spiritually realized soul. So you can go from 1 to 4.
But Drew, through duty you can become rich as well.
Yeah.
You might not claim it personally, but through duty you can acquire wealth. But you might not. In the form of a dilemma, you can have whatever, but he's doing his duty.
Yeah.
Or he's living in a big house. He's doing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's not. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. That's the whole idea with duty. It's not you don't do duty to acquire wealth. You do duty for the sake of the duty. When we're in India, how many times does this happen? We'll say to somebody, we ask, you know, can you help us? And we need this or we need that, and we say this, and then the person goes and does it. He does it, and we've had this experience numerous times. And then he says, here it is, this is what you need, this is what you want. We say, oh, thank you so much, thank you for help. Oh, no, there's no need. No need to think. Well, why not? Because I have no choice. It is my duty. I cannot not do, I must do. That is the only way for me. And that's how they look at it. So there's no question in duty. They're duty bound. So, I mean, you still say thank you, but, you know, it's interesting how the mind is conditioned. Yeah, because if you're a Westerner, you hear that for the first time, you think, oh, okay, what's this guy up to? You know, what's he really want? Because that's how we think. Mm-hmm.
But and not saying that there aren't some people there that don't want something. There are, but there are a lot of good people. There's got to be. There's a billion of them. There's got to be a few good ones there, right? Okay, good. Now, just to touch briefly, when we get liberation, we've talked about this numerous times. There are three stages of God realization. Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjanam anvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjite. The lowest stage, energy, diversity, personality. You can realize God on three levels. Energy, that's the bottom one. Brahman. Diversity, Paramatma. And personality, Bhagavan. So energy is the divine or spiritual energy. Sometimes in your meditation, sometimes in your prayer, you will be swept away, swept up in this feeling of love because you're communing with divine energy. I'm sure you've experienced it. Alright? That's the energy. Diversity is, and the energy is the lowest form. Not that it's low in terms of bad, it's just the first level. Diversity is actually being able to see God in everyone else. Sometimes it's easier to see God with your eyes closed without having to look at these, no offense, the other characters around you who are just getting under your skin. You know what I mean? So energy is sometimes easier to reach and feel that communion. In Christianity, we call this, or in Catholicism, we call it the Holy Spirit. All right? And the Holy Spirit came down upon them. You see the dove and it's nice paintings, you know. Diversity means actually seeing, feeling God in everyone else. Not just, oh yeah, yeah, I know, everyone's a soul. Got it. No, 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 not that quite. You know? No. It's really being able to feel that God is present in these other people. Not the ones you like. The ones you don't like.
Yeah, the ones that ripped up the floorboards.
The ones that ripped up the floorboards in the little old lady's house. Now, if you can feel a communion with God in that person, I am bowing down at your feet because you are a very, very evolved soul. And that is God in diversity. Paramatma, super soul. And then personality is God face to face. Just like we're sitting here, God comes in. It's stated in the Vedas that when you can't see God with these eyes, because you can, but if you can't yet, then God will appear in the form of wood or marble or a painting or stone. Why? Because you can't see him. So that way you can focus. It's easier for mundane eyes to remember God. And then you can offer, we like to offer candles and incense and flowers. Thank you for the lovely flowers. And Gerbil, thanks to you for the flowers last week. So we offer those flowers to God. So, in this way, we can offer service until we can see God, He, God, She, face to face. Alright? So, let us move on to Saraswati. So, Saraswati is the goddess of learning and the patron of the arts, according to the Vedic understanding. And that is she pictured there. She's holding a veena. That stringed instrument is a veena. And as we've said before, sometimes they're depicted with forearms, meaning there are empowered individuals like gods or demigods or demigoddesses beyond the human realm. And what you sort of cannot see up in her right hand is some japa mala. Does anybody have some there? Beads, chanting beads like you would do rosary in the Catholic Church. So that is for chanting. Mantras. And then in her left hand is a book. So she would be the patron. Well, we have it here, don't we? On the pages that I gave you. At the bottom, it says the benefits of chanting this mantra. So these are the things that would be represented by Saraswati. Creativity, artistry, speech, poetry, musical composition, writing, singing, dancing, painting, drawing, design, inspiration, becoming or finding the muse, wisdom, understanding, compassion, empathy, advocacy, beauty, expressing the essence of the gentle feminine, truth, and love. So, if you need some inspiration or creative inspiration, if you're an artist, and you sing or dance or play or paint or whatever it is you might do, or you're a business person and you need to figure a more creative way to do business or to come up with inventive ideas, you might chant this mantra to Saraswati. Saras means water. And the water or the liquid is the essence. So really what it means is essence. When you eat an apple, you don't eat the... What is it that you savor most in the apple?
Juice.
Isn't it? If you have an apple and it's dry, or what do we say, wooden, at least where I grew up, they used to say it's wooden, like wood. So it's the juice that you savor when you taste things. So the juice is the essence. And vat, or what, or vat means one who possesses this, the juice, the essence. And vati is the feminine ending. So it's she who possesses the juice. So she brings the juice. Yeah. Okay, so the mantra is... now the mantra is on your page, and then how to pronounce it is beneath. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. So Aing is a what? What do you call that? A bija. A bija mantra. Bija means seed. 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 S-E-E-D. Like a little seed. Mm-hmm. Like an apple seed. So a bija mantra has within it the essence of the person or the energy you are trying to attract or connect to, right? Aing is Saraswati's
bija, mantra, seed, sound. Okay? And ayin is knowledge. It's really knowledge. And or the arts. So, creativity. So you can even go around ayin, ayin, ayin.
Kling.
Kling.
That's a good one, attraction.
Kling is love and enjoyment. Shring is Lakshmi's. Kling is the creation.
Gong
is Ganesh. Gong.
Gong.
Gong. That's Ganesh. Om is, of course, the one, right? Om is the sound. Om is the sound of the universe. You know, sometimes if you're real, real quiet and you just close your eyes and you listen and you hear that sound, that's Om. That's Om. Okay. So let us chant to Saraswati. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Aing Saraswatyai Swaha. Swaha is a sound that is generally used when you're making offerings into a sacred fire. Fire is established for a spiritual purpose, and it's established with mantras, and then they offer ghee or clarified butter into the fire. The concept is that, according to yoga philosophy, that the gods, God or the gods, the lesser gods, will receive offerings. Fire. The fire is a the mouth of the gods. So whatever is offered into the fire is consumed and taken to the heavens, so to speak. That's the concept. I've participated in many, many fire, sacred fire ceremonies throughout my lifetime. And found them to be very powerful. We've done many ourselves in the back garden. Not at this house yet, but we will. All right. So let's do a little meditation. Okay, this might be appropriate today. I was thinking about this. Today we'll look at the shadow. The shadow is that part of our psyche, our subconscious, who feels left out, repressed, neglected, unseen, unrecognized, perhaps unloved, and lives in the shadows. More often than not, in most people, the shadow is their most creative part. But they're afraid of it. They're afraid to let it out, to experience it. So we're going to allow ourselves to visit the shadow in whatever form he or she presents itself. The shadow is more often than not a male figure, but I'm not going to hold you to that. So close your eyes.
Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down from the heavens, down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. And breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply. Relax. All right. You're in a room. What kind of room is it? What is this room used for? How is it decorated? What is the feeling you get in this room? Is it light? Is it dark? Notice the room in as much detail as possible. Someone opens the door and enters the room. Who is this person? Is he a male? Is she a female? What is the person's attitude? Their behavior? How are they dressed? How do they respond to you when they see you? How do you respond to them? This is your shadow. Ask this person what they want from you. What do they want you to do? Are you willing to do it? Are you willing to do what they've asked you? And what is the conclusion? How do you end your time together? This is the close of the meditation. If you haven't yet finished the steps, please continue. If you've completed the steps, then please return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. You can open your eyes.